Translation. Those in human society who are intelligent should give up the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, and unnecessary labor. The original cause of all of these is the desire for unnecessary prestige and money. Please repeat. Those in human society who are intelligent should give up the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, and unnecessary labor. The original cause of all of these is the desire for unnecessary prestige and money. A report by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Here is the difference between Vedic civilization and the modern demoniac civilization. Vedic civilization concerned itself with how to achieve self-realization, and for this purpose one was recommended to have a small income to maintain body and soul together. The society was divided into Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, and the members of the society would limit their endeavors to meeting their minimum demands. The Brahmanas, in particular, would have no material desires. Because the Kshatriyas had to rule the people, it was necessary for them to have money and prestige. But the Vaishyas were satisfied with agricultural produce and milk from the cow, and if by chance there were access, trade was allowed. The Sudras were also happy, for they would get food and shelter from the three higher classes. In the demoniac civilization of the present day, however, there is no question of Brahmanas or Kshatriyas. There are only so-called workers and a flourishing mercantile class who has no goal in life. According to Vedic civilization, the ultimate perfection of life is to take sannyas. But at the present moment, people do not know why sannyas is accepted. Because of misunderstanding, they think that one accepts sannyas to escape social responsibilities. But one does not accept sannyas to escape from responsibility to society. Generally, one accepts sannyas at the fourth stage of spiritual life. One begins as a brahmachari, then becomes a grihastha, a vanaprast, and finally a sannyasi, to take advantage of the duration of one's life by engaging oneself fully in self-realization. Sannyas does not mean begging from door to door to accumulate money for sense gratification. However, because in Kali Yuga people are more or less prone to sense gratification, immature sannyas is not recommended. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in his Nectar of Instruction, Atyahara prayaschascha pajalpo niyamagraha Jana Sangas Chalolyam Cha Sadbir Bhakti Vinashati. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following activities. 1. Eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. 2. Over endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. 3. Talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. 4. Practicing the scriptural rules and regulations for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. 5. Associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6. Being greedy for mundane achievements. A sannyasi should have an institution meant to preach Krishna consciousness. He need not accumulate money for himself. We recommend that as soon as money accumulates in our Krishna consciousness movement, 50% of it should be invested in printing books and 50% for expenditures, especially in establishing centers all over the world. The managers of the Krishna consciousness movement should be extremely cautious in regard to this point. Otherwise, money will be the cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, material attachment, material poverty, and unnecessary hard work. When I was alone in Vrindavan, I never attempted to construct maths or temples. Rather, I was fully satisfied with the small amount of money I could gather by selling Back to Godhead, and thus I would provide for myself and also print the literature. When I went to foreign countries, I lived according to the same principle. But when Europeans and Americans began to give money profusely, I started temples and deity worship. The same principle should still be followed. Whatever money is collected should be spent for Krishna, and not a farthing for sense gratification. This is the Bhagavat principle. Om Gyana Dhirandasya Jajanjana Shalakaya Chaksorum Litam Jena Tasmei Shri Gurave Namaha. Translation once again. Those in human society who are intelligent should give up the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, and unnecessary labor. The original cause of all of these is the desire for unnecessary prestige and money. So this particular section is in that part of the seventh canto related to the chapter called The Behavior of a Perfect Person. And this particular section is related all to Narada Muni speaking to a renunciate, a true renunciate, described as a sort of a python, whereby he's renounced everything. And in the questions and answers, or in the conversation that takes place between them, this one aspect is discussing about the evil of everything, this thing we call money, or the resulting factor which comes along with money called greed. And it's very interesting here in the purport where Srila Prabhupada really So in this section here, Prabhupada's really making a comparison between Vedic culture and modern civilization, really looking at the benefits and the fallacies of each. The purpose of Vedic culture, Prabhupada describes here, is to achieve self-realization. And for this purpose, he describes how what's generally required is just simply a small income to take care of the body and soul together. If life was so simple these days, if just a small amount of money could keep us satisfied these days, it's become very complicated and very convoluted in modern society. Perhaps when those of us who travel India, obviously when we go and visit our centers in India, it's not quite the same because we're in a sheltered situation, particularly in Mayapur, within our own grounds. We don't really experience life, but perhaps those who may have traveled extensively across India, you may come across some people who are able to live a real life of simplicity. The weather isn't so the weather's more conducive, it's a little warmer. You're not always having to face very, very harsh conditions. Although there may be harsh conditions in terms of heat, but people are able to live more simply. But here in the UK or in Europe, it's a little bit more difficult. There are more challenges. And a society has developed which is always pressing for accumulation, really. Just this principle of constantly wanting to collect and hoarding for another day. And particularly in modern society, even in the last, although we say the Industrial Revolution began a few hundred years ago, even in the last 20 years, there's been tremendous change in how society is working. And really, and you know, the story in the papers every day now at the moment is all to do with financial discrepancy. It's all revolving around the misuse of money. particularly in banks. Banks have become were institutions which could be trusted, which could where you could place the money and it would be safe and it would be looked after, and you could be assured that, you know, your money would not be exploited, wouldn't be taken away. But now, modern society has reached a particular stage where you can't really trust a bank anymore either. Very interestingly, just last week there was a letter published in the New York Times where a member of a very, very prominent bank was just confiding with the rest of the population that the bank, which is one of the highest respected institutions around the world, very successful, it had a culture of trust. It had a culture where you could, you know, as a person who banks there, they would advise you appropriately. They would advise you to look after your money for the long term. And in his letter, he spelled out that actually, in the time he's been there, in 12 years, he's seen things turn around 180 degrees, where it's a culture of conceit. It's a culture of really, practically, he was saying that they're scams, that the people who would bank there would be advised to put their money in places where, which wasn't a stable place to put your money. They would be asked to invest into dividends where money is likely to be lost, but there's money to be made for the bank or for the individual, because now it's a culture of bonuses. So you get a good deal and you get a percentage. And it got to a stage where he said that the integrity of the bank has been lost now. People in the top positions are talking about, are criticizing their customers instead of having respect for their customers. They're calling them names, all sorts of funny names they call them. And they are really there to exploit customers. Obviously, when somebody writes like this, and it's a top bank, there's a lot of, it's a big scandal. And no doubt within the upper echelons of that particular bank, they're fast trying to address these issues. But this is really what culture's come to. And, you know, the underlying seed of this is all to do with greed. It's quality of greed. And greed has increased so much that people are wanting more and more and more. And because there's certain insecurity with the present economic climate, it's almost however much I can make this time, you know, I better do it because I'm going to be losing my job soon. So I should just gather as much as possible. And then I can retire in the Bahamas or in Switzerland or someplace else. So that's become the present mentality. And it's really very interesting because in one sense, here from Vedic civilization angle, we're talking about simplicity. You know, Prabhupada's discussing about just the bare minimum to maintain body and soul. Whereas in broader society, you know, everything's going the opposite way. And just last week, a few weeks ago, in some meetings we've been having with looking at the vision of the manor, one of our team members did a little presentation on Varnashram. And he came up with a really very, very interesting model, which I just wanted to share with you some thoughts from there. And let me just see if I can. And he picks a passage from the Mahabharata where Bhishma Dev is on his bed of arrows about to leave, and all the Pandavas have come beside him, and Krishna is there also. And there's a conversation which ensues about virtue, wealth, and pleasure. Virtue, wealth, and pleasure. And it's a long conversation. I'm not going to go into the depths and details of it, but what in essence was being discussed is that wealth has its root in virtue, at least particularly in Vedic culture, that wealth has its root in virtue. And pleasure is said to be the fruit of wealth. Pleasure is the fruit of wealth. So what it's basically saying is that there has to be a rooting. There has to be rooting in scripture or in Vedic culture for us to be able to earn wealth in the proper way. Otherwise, what happens, for instance, in today's society is that we earn wealth, but there's always an expense. Either there's an expense because of, if we talk about milk, I'm doing lots of milk projects at the moment, it's to do with a cow, the cow's exploited, or we exploit the land, or we exploit the oceans, or we exploit something around us in nature. So true wealth should be aligned to some virtuous activity, virtuous deed. So it has to be rooted in scripture. And pleasure comes from wealth. So naturally, if we have money, we go and spend it. So that pleasure comes from wealth. So if everything is looked at in terms of virtue, wealth, and pleasure, and if they're all aligned, then we will be able to live very satisfying lives without exploitation of the resources of the earth in a negative way. There'll be a kickback, some form of karmic kickback. Today's society, however, is built in the opposite way, almost 180 degrees the other way, whereby the desire, this devotee Kapil was describing how desire has been put on a pedestal. It's almost been put on a throne, and we worship desire. And if we look in society, we're being sold continuously. It's consumer-led. People, it's fanning desires. You know, these adverts for cigarettes, I mean, not so much anymore. Things are changing here in the UK. But the adverts of cigarettes would be there from an early age, and they used to find that actually young children or young people would be the one who'd be attracted to those most. And once they develop the habit, then the whole idea is that you sustain that habit by providing that desire that's been initially fanned. So there are many, many things like that, whether you know, practically all devotees are on the web these days. Everybody surfs a little bit, if not only to do the email. And you'll see ads coming constantly. We walk out on the streets, there are big billboards everywhere. So it's fanning that seed of desire. So I want more, I want this, I want. And then from that seed of desire, wealth is developed. Not by all, but by a few. And from that wealth, once that wealth accrues a lot, to overcome the guilt that develops as a result of accruing wealth, let's do a little bit of charitable work somewhere to help some children in Africa or help some children in India or do some sort of activity which sort of gets rid of some of that guilt. Now, in some ways, you know, we read that about that even in our scripture. You know, karma yoga is all about doing fruitive activity, but then you make up for it. And, you know, a businessman will offer something in charity to try and get rid of any ill karma. But the principle here is that Vedic culture is coming from one angle, where it's virtue, wealth, and then pleasure comes. But modern society is going from the other angle. You set with pleasure's the prime goal, set the desire, pleasure, wealth, and then, if you're lucky, maybe a bit of virtue, virtuous activity. So it's just another way for us to look at that. But, you know, that's where our role comes in as devotees. Our role is to educate people and help to see differently and to understand differently and show that it can work. Then Prabhupada, in this particular purport, goes on to look at the underlying theme of this whole chapter. The underlying theme of this whole chapter has been about sannyasis. So Srila Prabhupada starts to discuss about, according to Vedic civilization, the ultimate perfection of life is to take sannyas. But at the present moment, people do not know why sannyas is accepted. Because of misunderstanding, they think that one accepts sannyas to escape social responsibilities. But one does not accept sannyas to escape from responsibility to society. Generally, one accepts sannyas at the fourth stage of life. One begins as a brahmachari, then becomes a grihastha, a vanaprastha, and finally a sannyasi, to take advantage of the duration of one's life by engaging oneself fully in self-realization. Sannyas does not mean begging from door to door to accumulate money for sense gratification. However, because in Kali Yuga people are more or less prone to sense gratification, immature sannyas is not recommended. That's an interesting, I've never read this term, immature sannyas. Obviously, we understand, we've read that sannyas is not recommended in the age of Kali, but it's this term, immature sannyas is something I've not read before. And it's very telling in many ways. I mean, unfortunately, we as a society are a living example. You know, many, obviously for the sake of preaching, Prabhupada, you know, did initiate many devotees and gave sannyas to many devotees in the early days. At some point, unfortunately I don't have the exact quotes with me, but there was certain regret that devotees took sannyas prematurely, that they weren't really suited or ready for it. And unfortunately there were many, many consequences as a result. In fact, in some particular passages where Prabhupada talks about that, it's almost as a result of that that, you know, we come to Krishna consciousness and we go like this and then we go like this and we may go like this and we go like this, that Prabhupada also recommends Varnashram. Varnashram helps to steadily practice and gradually go forward in the path of devotion. Here, obviously, Prabhupada's talking about accumulating money for sense gratification. My sense is he was probably referring to, there must have been some issue happening in society at that time for him to be talking about that. But he does, later on in the purport, come back to that point, and he says that a sannyasi should have an institution meant to preach Krishna consciousness. He need not accumulate money for himself. We recommend that as soon as money accumulates in our Krishna consciousness movement, 50% should be invested in printing books and 50% for expenditures, especially in establishing centers all over the world. It's a very interesting example, this whole section, because Prabhupada's sort of stating what an ideal would be, and this principle that Rupa Goswami had established, that 50% for the cause and then the rest should be for looking after one's needs. And in translating that into ISKCON society, Prabhupada saying 50% for printing books and then 50% for expenditures. So expenditures means whatever needs there may be. But out of that 50%, he's recommending that especially in establishing centers all over the world. So centers all over the world means centers all everywhere, establishing more and more centers. And then he gives a warning. And this is very interesting. The managers of the Krishna consciousness movement should be extremely cautious in regard to this point. Otherwise, money will be the cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, material attachment, material poverty, and unnecessary hard work. So this warning is, Prabhupada seems to imply that if you're not careful with the funds that you're raising, and if they're not used appropriately, then they will end up creating all of those things which are, we relate to material things, which is lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment. And I was just looking back at a few, in the verse a couple of days ago, there was a very interesting section in there where Prabhupada was elaborating even in more detail about the difference. If this principle that Rupa Goswami says that if something's used in the service of Krishna, if money's used in Krishna's service, then we have nothing to worry about, because then it won't create all of those things. Then it becomes, it's Krishna's, it's Krishna consciousness. But if somehow money is misused for sense gratification, then problems will start to occur, and then it becomes a material thing. So there's a very clear distinction of what becomes material and what's spiritual. We may need certain things to look after body and soul, some minimal needs. But if that goes slightly beyond that body and need for body and soul, then it becomes a material thing. And straight away, as soon as it becomes a material thing, our consciousness is affected in a material way. And our actions are affected. And then we may start to lament. We may start to feel anger or fear or all the other things that come along with it. So it's very interesting. Prabhupada's just clarifying. And he goes on a little bit further. He says that when I was alone in Vrindavan, I never attempted to construct any maths or temples. Rather, I was fully satisfied with the small amount of money I could gather by selling back to Godhead. And thus, I would provide for myself and also print literature. When I went to foreign countries, I lived according to the same principle. But when Europeans and Americans began to give money profusely, I started temples and deity worship. The same principles should still be followed. Whatever money is collected should be spent for Krishna and not a farthing for sense gratification. This is the Bhagavat principle. So it's really nice in this purport how Prabhupada just is using his personal example. You know, he came with practically nothing. He lived on very simple things, and he followed that same principle throughout. I was just reading a book about Varnashram recently, and in there was one particular section where Prabhupada was talking to he was just saying that actually he was talking about Detroit Temple, and he said that, you know, when I went to see the estate agent for the Detroit Temple, he gave the history. He said, firstly, Detroit Temple, you know, it was built by somebody many years ago, and they spent thousands, millions of dollars to make this beautiful mansion. And then, whatever reason, nobody was living there, and they were trying to sell it. So when I went there, he said, $350,000. And Prabhupada said, $350,000. And he started to talk to him. And then he said, look, I'll give you $300,000 cash. And the man said, deal, done. And then Prabhupada started laughing. At that time, I didn't even have a penny. There was nothing. There was nothing in our bank account. And that spirit was there, that if your desire is right, and if you, you know, try hard, Krishna will provide. And then he laughed. He said, again, and he said, even Bombay, Juhu, I was offered this land, but we had nothing at all. You know, I just simply had that desire that I wanted to see Radha Krishna there. Anyway, Prabhupada worked in amazing ways, and we may say he's a pure devotee, and he can do anything. Well, the point is, he said that you're all also have that potential. You're pure devotees. You can do it also. He set the example, and the point here is that it's important to follow the principle that everything should be used for Krishna, not a farthing for sense gratification. We struggle, you know. Who can put that up at their hand and say, I have no sort of side desire? You know, I live in the ashram. I'm a perfect brahmachari. I have no slight desire for anything else. Any hands? Very few of us would place ourselves in that situation. And if we do, we'll probably get shot down by Maya straight away. But we should aspire for that. As Vaishnavas, we should aspire for that constantly. Because if we don't aspire for those things, that ideal, we either go up or we go down. And whether at the beginning when we come to devotional service, our journey is like a roller coaster. As we go along, hopefully it should get a little less like that, and hopefully in the end it should be like a little nicer, and then it should be like that and going upwards, you know, like to the lotus feet of Krishna. So, and that leads us to the final point here Prabhupada's making, that this is the Bhagavat principle. The Bhagavat principle. And I just wanted to share with you a couple of things I picked up, which I really felt very inspired. Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki. I've got two things to read, which elaborate a little bit on this Bhagavad principle. One is a letter to Mukunda Maharaj in 1970. Anyway, it's a letter about something else, but he says in there, religion means the bona fide process by which we understand God. And the first class religion is that which teaches people to develop love of God. To know or accept the authority of God is one thing, but to love God is another. Now that's an interesting distinction. To know or accept the authority of God is one thing, but to love God is another. Never thought of it like that. Generally, people are interested in material comforts, and they make God as the supplying agent. This kind of devotion is not purified. It is contaminated by material desires. But when one is elevated to the position of giving everything to God, out of love and affection, that is the first-class position. We are teaching this philosophy in the name of Krishna consciousness, and it is applicable to all sober persons. Sober or not, you have to ask yourself, am I sober? The Bhagavad principle is that because we can be happy simply by developing our dormant love of God. This is our first business. And I'm going to read you something else. This is a letter to Brahmananda in 1967. And it's a bit of a long letter, so listen very, very carefully. It's some very interesting points Prabhupada brings up here. He said, I have read your statements regarding opening centers. I am not in agreement with Mr. Altman that we are expanding very thinly. This is in 1967. I am not in agreement with Mr. Altman that we are expanding very thinly. In my opinion, a single sincere soul can maintain a center. You know, I started the center 26 Second Avenue alone. I took the risk of $200 per month for the rent. At that time, there were no assistants. Mukunda, at that time, was a friend, but there was no responsibility for him for maintaining the center. Gradually, Kirtananda and Hayagriva joined, but they did not take any responsibility. Still, I was maintaining the establishment simply by depending on Krishna. And then Krishna sent me everything, men and money. Similarly, if a sincere soul goes out and opens a center in any part of the world, Krishna will help him in all respects. Without being empowered by Krishna, nobody can preach Krishna consciousness. It is not academic qualification or financial strength which helps in these matters, but it is sincerity of purpose which helps us always. Therefore, I wish that you will remain in charge of New York. Let Satsarup be in charge of Boston. Let Mukunda be in charge of San Francisco. Let Janardhan be in charge of Montreal. Let Nandarani and Ayananda be in charge of Los Angeles. And let Subaldas be in charge of Santa Fe. In this way, you will follow my example as I did in the beginning at 26 Second Avenue. That is preaching, cooking, writing, talking, chanting, everything one man's show. I never thought about the audience. I was prepared to chant if there were no men to hear me. The principle of chanting is to glorify the Lord and not to attract a crowd. If Krishna hears nicely, then he will ask some sincere devotees to gather in such a place. Therefore, be advised that thousands of centers may be started if we find out a sincere soul for each and every center. We do not require more men to start. If there is one sincere soul, that is sufficient to start a new center. With this expectation, I wanted to send Kirtananda to London, and he has proved himself unworthy. Anyway, he goes to talk a little bit about Kirtananda. And finally, he says, let us remain sincere to Krishna and his bona fide representative, and we are sure to carry out our mission successfully. Hope you are well. So, I just thought this was a very good example of the Bhagavad principle, being dependent on Krishna, being sincere. And, you know, no matter what in this day and age, you know, we may feel that, oh, I don't have this, I don't have that, I don't have so many things. And we may say, it's easy for us to say, oh, Prabhupada was a pure devotee, he could do it and we can't. I mean, we have seen many times in our society, you know, the success of a preacher just going out and trying with sincere desire. And when there's a sincere desire, Krishna will arrange for those souls who are ready to come and visit. And, you know, a personal insight from, you know, my experience in the past was, at 16 I asked the question, you know, who is God? Where are you? What is it all about? And just sticking to that question, somehow Krishna directed me. Now, you know, I always thought the devotees were a bit funny looking and awkward and strange, but somehow the journey began, and it, although it went to many other places, it came to devotional service, and this is where, you know, the soul finds satisfaction and it rests itself. And so our job is to follow this Bhagavad principle and really surrender ourselves in this way. So Prabhupada in this way sets an example. He tells us it differentiates between what's material society or what's modern greed-propelled society, where it's consumer society, and what's Vedic society and what are the Vedic principles. And then he helps us to see how he describes how we should engage ourselves. He describes some of the pitfalls we should be careful of, and then inspires us by his own example to follow what we would say is the Bhagavad principle, where, you know, full surrender to him without any, full surrender to Krishna without any question, and really being sincere in how we offer ourselves. There I shall stop. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, any points for discussion?